It is October the 10th, and we are beginning Treyaser with the book of Hosea. So Hosea, of course, is the first of the Treyaser. The Treyaser, as you know, there are 12 separate Nevi'im in Treyaser. We've talked about this before. We had a little bit of a synopsis of Treyaser. We'll just give a short introduction now that the Treyaser are not minor prophets. They were major prophets. Any Navi that gets his words written down, his or her words written down for posterity, has to have been a major Navi. But the words of the Treyaser are shorter. We have less from each of the Treyaser than we have from the larger Sifrei Nevi'im. So where Yeshaya is very long and Yechezkel is very long, Yirmiyahu is very long, but the 12 in Treyaser are much shorter, and that's why they are put into one Sefer. The Anshei Knesset HaGedolah saw fit to put them all into one large Sefer. Within Treyaser, there are larger ones and shorter ones. Hosea happens to be one of the larger ones. Hosea, I believe, has 14 prakim. That's 14 chapters, I believe that's how much it is, which is long for Treyaser, whereas it goes all the way to Ovadia, that has only one chapter in the whole Sefer. So within Treyaser, you have fluctuations of the sizes of the Sefer. I believe the other large one is Zechariah. I think those are the two large, Hosea and Zechariah are the two large ones. So we, of course, start here with Hosea at the beginning. So the pasuk says, "Devar Hashem Ashaya El Hosea ben Be'eri." The word of Hashem that was to Hosea ben Be'eri, "Bimei Uziah Yosam Achaz Yechizkiah Malchei Yehuda." In the days of Uziah, Yosam, Achaz, and Yechizkiah, the kings of Yehuda, "Uvmei Yoravam ben Yoash Melech Yisrael." In the days of Yoravam ben Yoash, the king of Israel. So we're getting a time frame for Hosea that it was in the days of these four kings of Yehuda and this one king of Yisrael. Chazal tell us right away that you see that the Navi outlived four kings. He spanned the lifetime of four kings. These four kings, Uziah, Yosam, Achaz, Yechizkiah. We learned about those kings, of course, in Sefer Malachim. To refresh your memories, Uziah was generally a tzaddik, although Uziah did did something wrong in the middle of his reign, and he was the one who tried to do avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, and as a result, he got tzaras. He then did tshuva the rest of his life, and you recall he's the one who had a house built for him in the graveyard, in the Beis HaKvaros, because he was tamei, and this was a way of reminding him about the tshuva he had to do for having done something wrong. His son Yosam was of the greatest kings ever, one of the greatest tzaddikim that we have recorded about. And he took over for his father while his father was still alive, because his father could not function as the king because he had tzaras. So Yosam functioned as king, and we learned that Yosam was a great mechabed av, that he had a huge kibud av, because he could have usurped the kingdom, because his father had no ability to stop him, and he could have done whatever he wanted, and instead he did everything according to his father's will. He checked with his father, and he did everything. He never took the kavod for himself until after his father died. Achaz was unfortunately a rasha. And then we have, of course, the great Chizkiyahu, the great tzaddik Chizkiyahu, who almost became Mashiach. So those are the four kings during whose reign Hosea was a Navi. Hosea is one of four Nevi'im that prophesied during this time. There's Hosea. There is Yeshaya. We learned about Yeshayahu. He's mentioned in Malachim. And we talked about him particularly in the reign of Chizkiyahu, but he's there during this time. Amos, who's one of the Treyaser, and Micha, who's another one of the Treyaser. So these four Nevi'im they prophesied during this time. All four of them were alive during the reign of these four kings. So they span the lifetimes of these four kings. Hosea is the first one of these four. Of these four, Hosea comes first. And see, Hosea, if you want to put it in perspective with the book of Yeshaya, Hoshea precedes Yeshayahu, or at least he overlaps with Yeshayahu, but he begins his nevuah before Yeshayahu has his nevuah. Now, I mentioned to you when we learned about this in the days of Uzziyahu, when we learned about his trying to do avoda in the Beis Hamikdash, and as a result, there was a major earthquake in Eretz Yisrael. We learned at the time, the reason why there was a major earthquake is because just as Korach, who tried to usurp the kahuna, was swallowed up by the ground, so the ground shook with intention to swallow up Uzziyahu for his trying to take the kahuna away from the sons of Aaron. So that earthquake, which Hashem did not allow to swallow Uzziyahu, that earthquake was a major earthquake in Eretz Yisrael, and it becomes, as I mentioned to you at the time, when we learned it in Melachim, that earthquake becomes a watershed event. And the it becomes a landmark in the timeline, that other things are timed based on this earthquake. So that, for example, we'll see later that Amos is going to prophesy 2 years before the Ra'ash, before the earthquake. That's his prophecy. Yeshayahu, his first prophecy is the Ra'ash, is at the time of the great earthquake. So it becomes a time in the timeline. We use it to figure out when everybody lived. So Hoshea preceded it, because he was already a Navi. As we'll see, the next pasuk is going to say that he was first. The Gemara says a frightening thing based on this point, this historical point, that these Nevi'im all span the lifetimes of these kings. And you can add to this observation the fact that when we learned Sefer Melachim, we saw that the kings didn't live to be ripe, to a ripe old age. Almost never. The kings all had, even the ones who were kings for a long time, Shlomo Melech was king for 40 years. That's a long time to be king, but he started when he was 12. So even those who ruled for a long time, they did not have very long lives by our standards. So Chazal tell us that Oy la l'rabbonus, woe to Rabbonus. Rabbonus sounds like being a rabbi, but we'll talk about what it means in a minute. Shemikareves es be'oleha, because it buries its owners, meaning those who have Rabbonus are buried because of it, which means it shortens the life of those who are in positions of Rabbanus. Now, it does not mean being a rabbi per se. It means being a leader. In that context, the word Rabbanus there means leader. Woe to leadership, because it buries those who have it. So Chazal tell us, you see the Nevi'im, now the Nevi'im were also leaders, correct? I mean, Nevi'im were leaders, but Nevi'im didn't have power. They didn't have official power. The kings had power. And the Chazal say that Rabbanus, meaning the leadership that comes with power, is mikareves es be'aleha, it buries those who have it. Because what happens is that those who are in that position of leadership, it's very difficult for them, first of all, to remain humble. That's very difficult. And second of all, to not misuse their power. And as a result of that, their lives are cut short. They don't live to a ripe old age. Whereas the Nevi'im, in their position of leadership, which is not one that comes with we'll call it governmental power, so they do live to be old. They do live to a ripe old age. And they therefore outlive all these kings. So all these kings, and these kings include Tzaddikim and Rishayim, Uzziah, Yosam, Achaz, Yechizkiah, who, as we mentioned, Yosam and Yechizkiah in particular were great tzaddikim. Uzziah was, by and large, a tzaddik. Achaz was a rasha. And yet, these Nevi'im outlive all these kings. So oy lo l'rabbonus shemekareves es be'aleha. Another point that Chazal make on this pasuk is the reference to Yeravam ben Yoash. Now he was the king of Yisrael. So if you just read the pasuk, it sounds like Yeravam ben Yoash also outlived all of these kings. Because it says four kings from Yehuda and one king from Yisrael. That would imply that Yeravam ben Yoash outlived all these kings. But in fact, he did not have a long life. He did not outlive all these kings. Yeravam ben Yoash is one of the kings in the line of Yehu ben Nimshi. So Yehu was the king of Yisrael who wiped out the line of Ahav. That was his job. He was given that job. He was told to do it, and he did it faithfully. And then his son was, I believe, Yeravam. Yoash was his son, I believe. I believe that was his son. And then Yeravam. There were four kings from Yehu. I can't remember if I might be missing one right now. But whatever it is, the Yeravam and Yoash was the second to last of the kings of the line of Yehu. And he did not live to be very old. Do you have it over there?
No, I don't know if it's on here, but it's something that's.
Yeah, I don't think.
Leah Lewis once printed.
Right,
it out.
Right. Yehu, Yehoachaz. Yoash. No, I didn't miss any. Right, Yehu. Yeah, then comes Yoash. Then comes. Yehoachaz, then comes. Let's see. No, I did miss one. I'm sorry. Right. Yehu's son is Yehoachaz. I'm missing that. Then comes Yeravam. Then comes Yoash. And then comes the last one, the last king of Yehu's line. So it's four after Yehu. Thank you very much. So Yeravam and Yoash is not listed because he lived as many years as all these kings. He is the only one listed of the Malchei Yisrael. Really, the kings of Yisrael did not deserve to be listed over here. The Malchei Yehuda, who were by and large tzaddikim, are listed. Even the one who is a Rasha, who is Achaz, is listed because he's in the line of the tzaddikim that we listed here. But Yeravam and Yoash, who is one of the kings of Yisrael, does not really deserve to be listed. Why is he listed? Because amongst these four Nevi'im, of which Hoshea is the first, but we mentioned the other three are Amos, Yeshayahu, and Micha. In these four Nevi'im, Yeravam ben Yoash does one great act of tzidkus. He does one great righteous act, which we will learn about when we get to the Sefer of Amos. In the Sefer of Amos, we will learn that there were those who tried to speak Lashon Hara, it's actually Motzi Shemra, about Amos. And they told Yeravam ben Yoash that Amos is trying to create a rebellion against you, that he's gathering people together to oust you from being king. And when Yeravam ben Yoash heard that, he said, Chas v'shalom, this tzaddik Amos would never do such a thing. He would never say such a thing. And in the event that he did, it would have been from Hashem, because he's a Navi. And he would never have said it without Hashem telling him to say it. So Yeravam ben Yoash gave Amos the benefit of the doubt and did not suspect him of being criminal. And because of that, Yeravam ben Yoash is Zoche, he merits to be mentioned here in this introductory pasuk to Hoshea and to the entire book of Treyasar. So you see that for not being mekabel Lashon Hara, for rejecting Lashon Hara, not accepting it, you see that he is recorded forever. That forever, even though he was not a great tzaddik, but he is recorded forever because he rejected Lashon Hara. He did not believe the Lashon Hara that he was being told. Pasuk Beis, verse 2. Tchilas diber Hashem behoshea, the beginning of the word of Hashem in Hoshea, So this is the beginning of his speaking to him. Vayomer Hashem el Hoshea, Hashem said to Hoshea, Lech, go, kach lecha eshes zinunim, take for yourself a wife of zinunim. Zinunim means prostitution. Take yourself a wife of prostitution. V'yaldei zinunim, and children of prostitution. Because the land has gone astray, which is really what it means, the word prostitution, gone astray from Hashem. Okay, so this needs a lot of explanation. But before we get to the main part of the pasuk, the first word tchilas, Dibra Hashem Hoshea, the beginning of the word to Hoshea, it's obvious that this is the beginning of the word to Hoshea. It's the first pasuk. It's the first nevuah that we have. Vayomer Hashem el Hoshea. Hashem said to Hoshea. So when it says the beginning, Chazal take that to mean that he is considered to be the tchila, the beginning of these four nevi'im. That's how we know that Hoshea is the first of these four nevi'im, because it says tchilas dibra Hashem b'Hoshea. Hashem's beginning his talk with Hoshea. Some would suggest that he was the greatest of the four nevi'im, which is surprising because Yeshayahu was one of them, but he may have been greater. Be that as it may, he's for sure, chronologically, his nevuah comes first. Now, it's important to note that Hoshea is called by Chazal, even in this first pasuk of Hoshea, he is called a zaken. He is called an old man. He was not a young person, which makes sense. The great Nevi'im typically did not become great Nevi'im when they were 15 years old. To become a great Navi took time. It took time of learning and of davening and getting close to Hashem. It took a very long time, and usually the Nevi'im were advanced in age. That was typical because it took a long time. Just as we today, when we have our great Torah scholars, they're typically older, not younger, because it takes that long to become a great Torah scholar. Well, it takes a long time to become a great Navi.
What about Shmuel?
So Shmuel, he's an exception. He became a Navi very, very young. That's a very good point. He became a Navi very, very young, but he did not become the leader of Klal Yisrael till he was advanced in age. So, but Hoshea was already called a Zaken at this point. Now, all we have is that Hashem told Hoshea to take a wife of prostitution. What this means is that he should marry a woman who was a Zona, who was a prostitute. He should find a woman who was a prostitute and marry her and have children from her. So this is a shocking thing to say, to tell a Navi, to tell anybody for that matter, but certainly a Navi who, and now remember, a Navi is a person. The Rambam lists the various qualities that a Navi has to have. One of the qualities of a Navi, we've talked about this before, is a Navi is a person that is never masiach das from Hashem, which means he never takes his mind off of Hashem. Never. That means 24/7, every waking moment, a Navi never allows his or her mind to stray from thinking about Hashem. So that's obviously a very lofty level. For most of us, it's difficult to do that just while davening Shmoneh Esrei. It's difficult to concentrate the entire Shmoneh Esrei, the whole 5 minutes it takes to daven Shmoneh Esrei. We can't keep our minds on what we're reading in front of us and thinking about Hashem. So a Navi, it's 24/7, nonstop, never taking their minds off of Hashem, no matter what they're doing. Eating, in the shower, whatever it is. They never take their minds off of Hashem. Talking to other people, never. So to tell a Navi of all people to go marry a woman who is a prostitute is shocking. And in fact, to tell anybody to go marry a woman like that is shocking. So Chazal tell us there's a lot of background here that is not in the Pesukim. And the background is as follows. Hashem said to Hoshea, your children have sinned. Your children, referring to the Jewish people, your children, meaning the people who you're leading. Because again, Hoshea was already a Zaken. He was already older. He was not a young person. He was an older person, recognized as a leader of the Jewish people. The people who you are leading, Hoshea, they've sinned. And Hoshea responded to Hashem, well, then change them out. Find another people. So then get rid of them. Find, if they're sinning and they're not being faithful to you, then find another nation. That was his response. So Hashem, therefore, wanted to teach Hosea a lesson. Because Hashem, so to speak, said that what Hosea should have responded is, they're my children, Hashem, they're your children. That should have been his response. But that wasn't his response. So Hashem wanted to elicit that kind of response from Hosea. Therefore, he tells him a commandment that he is to go and marry a woman who is a prostitute. Now, let's first deal with the question of marrying such a woman in the first place.
Do I know why he responded like that?
What's the issue? What's that? Oh, sorry. Okay, all right.
Nothing.
All right. Say that again.
Do we know why he responded like that?
We don't know. We don't know why he responded like that. No. We don't know why he responded like that. So. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see. There's a process.
It's unusual.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, he obviously held that. Listen, they're not behaving properly. So. Okay. So. Is a woman who is a zona. A woman who's a zona. So a zona means a woman who obviously has had a physical relationship with many men. So is she permitted to marry anybody? Is one allowed to marry her? So first of all, what kind of avera is she doing? So everybody agrees what she's doing is wrong. It's an avera, even though she may be single, but it's still an avera. And there are various opinions for which avera she is doing, but it's certainly prohibited what she is doing when she's behaving in that way. The is she permitted to marry anybody else? So clearly she cannot marry a kohen. She'd be prohibited from marrying a kohen just because we don't know who she was with. And since you don't know who she was with, if you see it again, I'll take care of it.
That's fine.
Okay. So
I'll take care of it.
So since we don't know who she was with, so she may have been with somebody that would invalidate her to a kohen. So she certainly cannot marry a kohen. Could she marry anybody else? Yes, in theory she could. The problem is, though, how does any man have faith in her as a wife? A wife, after all, at the very basic level, has to be faithful to her husband. And a woman who is behaved in this manner, how can anybody trust her? So she's not a person that you would recommend as a likely candidate for marriage. So here Hashem tells Hosea that he must marry a woman like that. Now, if he's marrying a woman like that, so this woman has to understand that she's marrying a Navi. It's not that he's marrying a woman like this and she's behaving in the manner of the sinners of Klal Yisrael. I mean, she wouldn't be able to be married to a Navi if she were behaving in a terrible manner. So he had to find a woman who was a zona, but that was prepared to at least somewhat give up her ways. Has to be. Now, this is not the first example of a woman who was a zona who did teshuva and married a great person. Okay, so Rachav is our example. Rachav hazona. Rachav, who when she was not yet Jewish, was a zona, and when she converted, she actually married Yehoshua. So that's, you can't marry somebody greater than that. He was the leader of Klal Yisrael, and the successor to Moshe Rabbeinu as the one who was the greatest Talmud Chacham of the generation.
But the point you're making is that Rachav recognized Hashem.
That's
she
right.
She recognized that the Jewish people were going to be conquering Canaan. She recognized MS. She had a sensitivity to MS. So it's not a zona marrying Hosea. It has to be somebody doing tshuva and recognizing Emmet.
Okay, so here's the thing. Rachav on her own left that way of life.
Yes.
And she actually did tshuva. We learned, in Sefer Yehoshua, Mirza Shem, we learned one day, in Sefer Yehoshua, we find that she actually did tshuva before she became Jewish. That she said to Hashem, I sinned with this window and with this rope, and I want that to be a tshuva for me. So she, on her own, she rejected her previous life and became a tzaddikus. But here, Hoshea is seeking somebody out. Hashem is telling him to go seek out a zona. So that means the woman who he finds, although she may agree to turn over a new leaf, she certainly hasn't proven herself. She has not on her own repudiated her past. It's that Hoshea reached out to her and she agreed to say, okay, I will no longer behave in that way, I will now behave properly. So a woman like that is difficult to trust. Rachav would be much easier to trust because she rejected her previous life. She's no different, really, than any other convert who says, I reject my previous life, I'm now embarking on a new life. But here, it's Hoshea reaching out to this woman. So it makes it much, much more difficult to trust her, which is exactly what Hashem wants. Hashem wants Hoshea married to a woman who has agreed to do the proper thing, but that you don't really know. That it's possible that she's not being faithful. Not that she's actually not being faithful, but as you know, marriage requires a great deal of trust. And if there's any sense that perhaps this person is not trustworthy, that undermines the whole marriage, which is exactly what Hashem wanted over here. He wanted Hoshea to be in a relationship where he couldn't be 100% certain that his wife was faithful. That's exactly what Hashem wanted. And more than that, Hashem says, and you should have children from her. V'yaldei zinunim. You should have children from a prostitute. Now here's the thing. Having children from a zona means that you don't really know if they're your children. You don't really know who the father is. Meaning, he's married to her and she has agreed to be faithful. So in all likelihood, these children are from Hoshea. And in halacha, we are going to rule that the children are from the father. From the husband. That is how we're going to rule in halacha. Because halacha will follow what is most likely the case. But from an emotional perspective, any husband of a woman who had been a zona until he married her is going to have suspicions that maybe these children are not mine. And that's exactly what Hashem wanted. Hashem wanted Hoshea to be in a position where he doesn't really know if his wife is faithful, he doesn't really know if the children are from him. I want to emphasize again, he was already an old man. He was a zaken. Which means that that this is not a relationship that he's interested in by any stretch of the imagination. He wouldn't be interested because of the fact that she's not the greatest tzaddikus in the world. But even beyond that, he's an old man. It's not clear that he was interested in any relationship at this point. I don't know who he had been married to, whether he was still married and this was a second wife. It's not clear. It doesn't tell us in the Navi. But he certainly, had Hashem not told him to, he was not looking for a wife at this time. And here Hashem tells him to marry and to have children from this woman. And the reason is that the Navi tells us because the land has gone astray from Hashem. So the Pasuk tells us, Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, Vayelech vayikach es Gomer bas divloyim. He went and he took a woman, he married a woman named Gomer bas divloyim. Vatar vatel lo ben, she became pregnant and she gave birth to him, she bore him a son. So Gomer bas divloyim, Chazal, they expound upon her name to show that she was a real prostitute, that the names actually suggest that. And also they suggest that she was a woman that was well known as a zona, that people knew about her, they spoke about her. It wasn't like it was a woman that was kind of on the side. She was a well known person. Vayomer Hashem, I love Hashem, said to him, Kira Shemo Yisrael, name this son of yours Yisrael. Why? Ki od ma'at, because just a little bit longer. Ufakadati es demei Yisrael abeis Yehu, and I will visit the blood of Yisrael on the house of Yehu. V'yishbati mamluchus beis Yisrael, and I will take into captivity the kingdom of the house of Yisrael. Yehu was charged with the task of wiping out the house of Achav. Why? Because the house of Achav were Ovdei Avodah Zarah, they were terrible idolaters. And Yehu did so faithfully, he killed out Achav and his whole family. But then Yehu's family, Yehu himself and his family, began to worship Avodah Zarah. So Hashem said, as long as Yehu would not have done Avodah Zarah, then his killing of Achav was a mitzvah. He was supposed to, he was told by the Navi, kill out Achav and his family because they're idolaters. But once Yehu himself became an idolater, then that showed that his killing of Achav was really murder. Because he didn't improve the situation. The whole point was, get rid of the idolaters and replace them with a kingdom that does not worship idols. But if he worshipped idols himself, then the act of killing out Achav's family became murder. And therefore, Hashem says, I'm going to visit the blood of Yisrael, because that's where it happened. Achav lived in Yisrael, and that's where the murder took place. And I'm going to visit the blood of Yisrael on the house of Yehu, and I'm going to take them into captivity, and in fact, I'm going to take the whole Malchus Yisrael, the northern kingdom, into captivity. It wasn't many years after this when the entire northern kingdom goes into captivity. As you know, it was in the days of Chizkiyahu that the northern kingdom goes into Gullus. That Sancheriv takes them into Gullus. So I want you to name them Yisrael. I want to name your son Yisrael as a simon, as a sign for the fact that the northern kingdom is going to go into Gullus. Pasuk Hey, verse 5, V'ayabayamahu will be on that day, V'shavarti es keshes Yisrael, I will break the bow of Yisrael, meaning that's the strength of Yisrael, Be'emek Yisrael, in the valley of Yisrael. V'atarod v'atelet bas, she became pregnant again, she gave birth to a daughter. V'ayomer lo, and he said to him, Krosh Shema lo ruchama, name her Lo Ruchama, not pitied. That's a good word. Okay, not pitied. Ruchama means to have pity. To be merachim is to have pity. Not pitied. Ki lo osif od arachim es beis Yisrael, I will no longer show pity to the Jewish people. Ki naso es salahem, will I carry their sins? No, I'm going to punish them, says Hashem. Therefore, name her Lo Ruchama. Ruchama is a female name for us Jews. But Lo Ruchama is the opposite, obviously, no pity. Ves Beis Yehuda Rachem, but the southern kingdom, Beis Yehuda, I will show pity to. Voshatim Bashem Elokeim, and I will save them with Hashem their God. Velo Shiem Bekeshes Uvecherev Uvilmochama Besusim Uve Parashim. But I will not save them using the bow, the sword, war, horses, and chariots, and cavalry. Rather, as you know, in the days of Chizkiyahu, Hashem sent the Malach Gavriel that wiped out the whole army of Sancheirev, and there was no need for any kind of warfare. So, but I'm not going to have pity on the northern kingdom. Vatigmoles lo ruchama. So then she weaned Lo Ruchama, so it was 2 years later. Vatar Vatele Bain, she became pregnant, she gave birth to a son. Vayomer, and Hashem said, Krosh Shemo Lo Ami, name him not my nation. Ki Atem Lo Ami, because you are not my nation. Vanochi Lo Yalachem, and I will not be for you. Now you see here that the main issue is the northern kingdom, not the southern kingdom. And to answer your question, Mr. Sun, you were asking, why did he say this? Because really, the focus is not about all the Jewish people. The focus is the northern kingdom. And Hosea is saying to Hashem, get rid of them. Get rid of them. If they're not behaving, so who needs them? So Hashem has Hosea now marry a woman that he can't fully trust, and have children from her that he can't really know that they are his own. Now, The next pasuk, which we're going to really pause over here, but the next pasuk is a pasuk that is a positive pasuk. Let's read it, although we'll probably read it again next time. But the pasuk says, V'ayam yispar b'nei Yisrael k'chol hayam, and the number of the Jewish people should be like the sand of the sea. Asher lo yimad v'lo yisafer, cannot be measured, cannot be counted. V'ayam b'mkom asher yayamer lahem lo ami atem, and it will be in place that it would be said about them, you are not my nation. Yayamer lahem b'nei k'el chay, it will be said about them, they are the sons of the living God. So the Gemara says, what happened? We were just talking negatively about the Jewish people. Lo ami, lo ruchama, all these bad things. And then all of a sudden, a positive pasuk, and in fact, all of Perek Beis is positive. It's a positive thing. This Perek Beis, this second Perek, is the Haftorah for Parshas, I believe, Bamidbar. I believe it's the Haftorah for Parshas Bamidbar. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. So, because it's a positive thing. The whole second parak is a beautiful parak. So Chazal say, the way they word it is, Yesh Parshios Sheba Torah, there's paragraphs in the Torah, there are far apart from each other, like Mizrach and Mairiv, like East and West. They're completely separate from each other. The first parak of Hosea is totally negative, and then the second parak is all of a sudden positive. What happened? So Chazal, again, fill in the blank. So what happened over here? What happened is that after Hosea had the children from Gomer Bas Divloyim, from his wife, then Hashem said to Hosea, you know, you should have learned from Moshe Rabbeinu. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, after I started speaking to him, I told him he had to separate from his wife. So now, you have to separate from your wife. Send her away. So now we know that only Moshe Rabbeinu is the only person who had to separate from his wife. We know that that's not the norm. That's not the way Nevi'im are supposed to be. In fact, that was the whole issue that Miriam and Aaron had with the Lashon Hara of Miriam, was because of this. Because they said, what's Moshe separating for? That's not supposed to be. Because that's really not supposed to be. But Hashem, again, is using that paradigm in order to teach Hosea a lesson. So he says to Hosea, well, now I expect you to be like Moshe Rabbeinu. And you need to go, you need to send away your wife. So Hashem said, but Hashem, I have children from her. We have a family. I can't just send her away. We have small children. I can't just end this relationship. So Hashem said to Hosea, you don't even know if she's faithful to you, and you don't even know if these are your children, for sure. And yet, you are having trouble breaking off this relationship. And yet you tell me to discard the Jewish people, those who are the children of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, who are definitely the children of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and you're telling me to discard them? So that was the message to Hosea. And Hosea got the message loud and clear, and he immediately turned around, and he begins in Perek Beis to speak positively of the Jewish people and to daven to Hashem that he should rescind the evil decrees. Each of these children represents a different evil decree from Hashem against the northern kingdom. Yisrael, lo ruchama, lo ami. And now in Perek Beis, he's going to daven to Hashem to overturn all three of those bad decrees. And we'll see the use of ami, my nation, ruchama, and also a positive use of the word Yisrael, in that he's davening that Hashem should overturn all the decrees. So he gets the message. So this is the incredible beginning of the book of Hosea. Really, almost shocking. The whole thing is such an incredible thing. Now, the lesson was not an immediate lesson. If he married her and had three children from her, and in fact, when the daughter is born, it says that she was weaned. That's 2 years. They didn't wean the children for 2 years. It was typically they nursed for 24 months. That's what the Gemara says as a baseline. So between the children, you have to presume 2 months at least, because then a 9 month
2 years.
2 years, excuse me. 2 years and then a 9 month pregnancy. So you're talking roughly 3 years between the children at least. So he married her. It's got to be at least 9 months before the son is born. Then 2 years and 9 months till the daughter is born. I'm talking about minimally. And then 2 years and 9 months again till the son is born. So we're already 6 years, 7 years into this process. So Hashem wanted to teach Hoshea a lesson, but Hashem took a long-term road over here. A seven-year lesson over much time. But in the process, he really had Hoshea become accustomed to this relationship. 7 years, a long time. And then he says, walk away from it. So you see several things over here. First of all, you see that what Hoshea did wrong was not horrific to the point that Hashem needed to either punish him or correct him right away. It was okay that it took several years for the correction to happen. Also, you see from here that it was so important that this lesson be taught. As you see, the lesson was not a lesson for Hoshea alone. It is written here because it is a nevuah nichtav ledoros. It's written for all generations. That we are supposed to learn this lesson. And it was worth it to have a seven-year lesson, that it be recorded forever, so that we learn this lesson. So that's the second thing you see from here. You see also that when we talk about Moshe Rabbeinu separating from his wife, and we talk about that wasn't the norm, that was only Moshe Rabbeinu and not anybody else, you see, it's not just that it's not expected of anybody else, that's just because of Moshe Rabbeinu, the level he was on, etc. You also see that even a great Navi like Hoshea, it's not simple to do what Moshe Rabbeinu did. Moshe Rabbeinu being able to permanently separate from his wife was a very difficult nisayon, a great challenge, which Moshe Rabbeinu was able to do. But most Nevi'im would not be able to do it, even if it was something that should be done, or that would be, I should say, even if it should be done, they would do it. What I mean to say is, even if it was something to aspire to, a level to reach, let's say that was a level to reach, which it isn't, but let's say it was, it would be a very difficult thing for most people to do. Even Hoshea, who is of the greatest Nevi'im. I mean, he's in Treyasar. He's considered to be a great Navi. And yet, he can't. He says, I can't do it. He says, I can't walk away from this. So, and Hashem knew he wouldn't be able to walk away from it. That's why he set him up. Hashem set him up for this, knowing that Hoshea would say back to Hashem, I can't. So Hashem could say back to him, you can't. You don't even know if they're yours and you can't. And what are you telling me to walk away from my children? So that's a very important thing to note from here, that the Moshe Rabbeinu walking away from his wife is not a simple matter. We kind of like say it as if it's, yeah, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu separated from his wife. But it wasn't simple. It wasn't a simple thing at all. So what is the lesson? So the lesson, it's not rocket science. This is a pretty obvious lesson. But it's still important to focus on it, which is the following. That the Northern Kingdom, we learned this in Malachim. We learned it. They were pretty bad. And it was over and over and over and over again. I mean, they really did bad things. There were some individuals who were good, but by and large, they were not behaving up there. And the kings weren't behaving for sure. And there was rampant Avodah Zarah. Izebel committed huge murder, killing Nevi'im. I mean, it wasn't a very God-fearing place. It just wasn't so good. And Hashem gave them a great deal of time. He gave them a lot of time. He didn't just give them a year or 2 years. He gave them 100 years, 150 years. He gave them a lot of time to right the ship. And he gave them a lot of chances. And he gave them several dynasties. Each was supposed to right the ship. They unfortunately didn't. And eventually they were taken into Golus. But you see that Hashem has a very long rope. He really gives them a lot of time. A lot of time. And we personally expect that from Hashem when He deals with us. We want that from Hashem when He deals with us. But sometimes we don't want Hashem to give other people such a long rope. We don't want them to. We want Hashem to take care of people who are not, you know, to deal with people who are not behaving properly. So the Navi is telling us over here, they're still Hashem's children. They're still Hashem's children. I'm not talking here about people who Nebuch don't know any better. There, we can easily feel bad for them. We live in a community that's the whole focus of our community, is to seek out those who don't know any better and help them out. We're talking about people who know better and are not behaving properly. It's a lot harder to feel bad for them. And the Navi is saying, don't be so quick to write them off. Even if they know better and they're behaving improperly, it's true, there is onesh, there is punishment, God forbid. Hashem does ultimately punish if a person doesn't do tshuva. It's going to happen eventually, chas v'shalom. But our job is to constantly seek a way of helping and davening for those who don't understand, who are not behaving properly. That's our job. Now, I'm not talking about where the manner of the misbehavior is hurting directly us. Someone's attacking you, chas v'shalom. Someone is coming after you, is hurting you financially. I'm not talking about someone is a Russia in that way. There, a person has the right to daven to Hashem to save me from my oppressor. Everybody has the right to do that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people who are just not behaving properly. And those who, Baruch Hashem, are God-fearing, the response from us always has to be, Hashem, bring them back. Teach them right from wrong. Show them the right way. Help them out. Don't destroy them. If in the end, they may end up being destroyed, God forbid. But that's Hashem's cheshbon. That's His decision. That's not for us. That we don't call God's judgment down on those who are sinning. Our job is to only try to improve.